Hey, my friend Erica Andiola from Our Dream. Thanks for stopping by my office today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Well, Erica, I got to tell you, you gave me a little bit of a scare. Because a few weeks ago, I was told that you, as a matter of conscience, and as a matter of your conviction, that there must be immigration justice, that you ended up getting arrested over the course of the weekend. Many of us who know about your work, we admire you, but we were worried about you. Yeah. What made you feel that you needed to make that personal sacrifice in order to try to bring attention to immigration justice or injustice?
I think for me, it's important to show the urgency of the moment. And I think Dreamers already have the American support. You know, we have more than 80% of Americans have said that they support Dreamers.
Right.
I think a majority of, members of Congress support Dreamers. It's a bipartisan, issue. But I think that there wasn't yet the urgency that was needed.
Right.
And I think, through the DACA fight and the Dream Act fight from 2010, we showed that when we showed courage and when we really showed people what can happen to us, through civil disobedience or through ways of, getting people to understand that at this moment, if they take my DACA away, I could end up in jail and I could end up eventually in detention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's risky, it's scary, but I think some of us are ready to, to show that moral dilemma through our own, putting our own bodies in the line. And so, I did it. It's my third time getting arrested. This time around, we said, we're not going to leave the jail until, this happens.
How long were you in jail?
I wasn't there for 6 days.
That's a long time to be in jail.
For me, it wasn't just the fact that I was inside of this terrible place that nobody wants to be in, but it was also not knowing what was going to happen since they cut my communication with anybody after that.
Right.
So for about 4 or 5 days, I didn't know whether I was going to be transferred into the detention center or if I was going to be released with the rest of my friends. And so, but also it got me thinking and made me really humble to know and understand that that happens to people every day who are undocumented. They go in there in jails and they never know if they're going to come out or if they're going to be transferred into a detention center.
Well, we just heard about Jorge Garcia, lived in the United States for 30 years, has children born here, and they deported him. There's stories all over this country like this. There have been DACA people who've been deported. I really see you and the people you work with every day as the modern manifestation of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see these black and white grainy pictures of Martin Luther King getting arrested, and we think to ourselves, wow, what heroic, sacrifice. Well, the truth is, it's going on right all around us every day, and you are the vanguard of that. How do you see your fellow activists? Because you're one among many. You're one of the bigger voices, but you do have people who you work with. How do you see them in the struggle you guys are in right now?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I've always been inspired by the civil rights movement. And actually, that's that tactic of going into a jail, I actually read about it through the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm,
when students,
mm-hmm.
Dr. King, was in a jail. He did write a letter, explaining why he was doing what he was doing.
Letter from Birmingham jail.
And he was criticized. And
yes, he was.
He wrote that letter because he wanted to tell those folks who were criticizing him, this is why I'm doing this. Eventually he organized tons and tons of young people who said, we want to do this too. And they started doing those jail strikes and or the hunger strikes inside of the jails. And, for us, it was that inspiration from the civil rights movement, MLK and SNCC and the young people who were doing this. And also, the inspiration of our current, for me, my current heroes, which are a lot of dreamers who are putting themselves
right.
in the line, understanding that they have a lot to lose. And so it's definitely right now that moment that, we should be inspiring more young people, not, put them down and say, your ideas are crazy. Obviously, nonviolent ideas, at this moment, are things that we can work and that we can really, again, you know, push this country forward, you know, in many ways. We can also be here in Congress lobbying our senators and our members of Congress, but we can also be in the streets and we can also be doing other tactics to show that moral imperative, or that moral dilemma that we're going through in this moment.
How would you define the moral dilemma that we're in? I'm glad you're using moral language because that's how I feel it is. Talk to me about the moral dilemma that we are facing as a country if we do not bring justice to the Dreamers.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that we have, you know, we have a president who, you know, just the fact that we have this president is not something that this country should be putting up with, you know.
Right.
But I think it's also the 11 million people in this country who are undocumented, we are able to provide, you know, a huge boost to this nation in terms of economic power.
No question.
The Dreamers, you know, we're a smaller population, and perhaps we don't provide as much economic power to this nation, but we do have the ability to tell our stories, and we have been telling our stories since we came out of the shadows. And so I think for us, it was, you know, not just saying we are here to, you know, provide more economic power to this nation, but we're also human beings and we're afraid of being deported, but I'm going to tell you my story.
True.
And we were able to get more and more Americans to hear us, to understand us, and to feel compassion and really start actually caring for Dreamers.
Sure.
So it's really been our goal. And I think right now we have seen that there's a lot of support around, you know, our issue and our stories. It's just really translating them into action in Congress. And, you know, that's why we're still here fighting. And we're hoping that this week, you know, we can make something happen and finally pass the DREAM Act. It's been almost a decade since we're trying.
Well, you know, to me, the moral dilemma is this. It is morally just and morally right to treat every individual with dignity and with legitimacy, that there's no such thing as an illegal person, and that to declare such a person illegal because of documentation is to violate that person's core dignity as a person. All the books that we go by, whether we're Muslim, Christian, Jew, Hindu, book, we say, welcome the stranger, because once you were the stranger, that's in the Bible. And so to say now we know we reject the stranger is to violate the moral code we say we swear by. In that we just, it was, you know, it was the Christmas holiday passed a few weeks back. And they say, well, Jesus didn't have any room in the inn. There was no room in the inn, so he had to sleep in a manger, in a barn, with the barn animals. Are we now saying that this child who represents the whole faith of people, literally billions of people, who didn't have a place, we're going to now say that other children don't have a place? There are moral problems with using the police, the jail, all these things to chase people around because they don't have a paper, and then deprive them of their family's attention and deprive them of their liberty and to throw them into a country, many of whom haven't been to in decades. And then why are we doing this? To protect the border? First of all, under the North American Free Trade Agreement, companies go back and forth all they want to if they want to do commerce.
That's right.
Companies are allowed to go south of the border. They don't need a passport, you know, and go make money there. And yet, so companies can go to the lowest cost labor they can find in the trade zone. But workers can't go to the highest wage place they can find in the trade zone. Mm-hmm. That is an injustice. So these are the moral failures of our immigration policy. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's the closest thing to the American Civil Rights Movement going on now.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And I think, you know, for us, that was exactly the reason why we needed to tell our stories, because our stories were being told by the media. Our stories were being told, you know, by people who don't want us in this country. You know, to me, it's been really powerful to see when, you know, when I meet somebody who has this perception of undocumented people as someone who comes to take their jobs, as someone who comes to, you know, to do harm. And then I did identify myself as an undocumented person. You know, it's just incredible to see the way in which they shift their perception towards me and towards people like myself. And so, you know, I think we need to keep telling that story, which is the real story.
The real story.
We need to fix right now, we need to stop the bleeding, which the bleeding is a lot of dreamers right now are really concerned of what's going to happen to their lives.
Yeah.
We need to stop the bleeding, meaning that we need to stop, you know, raiding homes like mine, you know, start raiding workplaces.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I've been fighting for a dream because obviously it affects me, but I've also been fighting for families who are, you know, being raided by immigration, who are being targeted because my own, you know, home was raided, because my mom was taken, because I got to see, you know, my own mother in handcuffs, like my 55-year-old mother in handcuffs. After working so hard, after, you know, bringing me here with the hope that I was gonna be able to have a different future than I did in Mexico. And what she got was a punishment for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for me, it's important that we're focusing on this fight right now because it's what's right in front of us. And it's, you know, if we lose by March, we don't have a solution on this. We don't have a solution right now. We have dreamers getting deported. And we have dreamers right now losing jobs, losing their DACA and their work permit. But also, you know, I think we're not going to stop the fight because we have people like my mother who are still in deportation proceedings. We have 11 million people around the country who, you know, are still hurting and who right now all they hear from our from the president and from people who don't know the reality of why undocumented people are even here. You know, all they hear is that, you know, they could potentially be sent back and separated from their families. And so this is a huge fight. But like I said, we need to stop the bleeding right now and then look forward to what we can do to make sure that this country, you know, it's not treating other nations the way in which we've been treating them. That's the reason I came to this country.
Now, when you say stop the bleeding, are you referring to the fact that since President Trump and Attorney General Sessions rescinded the DACA program, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, that there have been people losing status every day? Is that what you mean by the stop the bleeding?
That's right. We have hundreds of people who are already losing their DACA status.
And what happens to a person once that happens?
When that happens, I mean, one, you lose your ability to work. You know, so if you were working at a car wash, you know, you're going to lose your income for your family. Or if you were working in Microsoft in a company, or if you're working as a doctor or a nurse, it doesn't matter where you were working, you're going to lose your status.
You're out.
And you can no longer work legally.
And there are people doing all those things.
Absolutely. We have people on the farms. We have people in the hospitals. We have people in tech companies all over the nation. And so, you know, it's frustrating because you work so, so hard. I mean, any American, you know, who wants to keep their job understands that they have to work really hard, or who wants to, you know, go to college or do what this country tells you that it's the right thing to do to keep moving forward, and all of a sudden you hit a roadblock. It's hard. It's devastating, you know, and not only that, but also you lose your ability to work, you lose your ability to drive, your driver's license, and you have now a way to be deported. The government has our information. There's millions of people in this country who are in the shadows, who are not out there, you know, giving their information to ICE or to DHS. We've given our information.
Right.
Our fingerprints are there. Everything is there.
In order to be in the DACA program, you have to have provided that.
Absolutely. They have every piece of information.
You have to have had a clean record.
We went through an FBI
background check.
Background check.
They know you're not dangerous to the country.
They know exactly who we are. And, I mean, that's to prove that, you know, this government knows exactly who we are and that, you know, we are not going to be a danger to anybody. But not only that, it's also on the flip side, the government has our information. And mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that, you know, we do have this protection for dreamers, that it's permanent, and that we make sure that if we run out of our DACA, nobody's going to come knocking on our doors trying to take us and at the same time taking our families if they're there.
So was there something going on wrong with the DACA program when Attorney General Sessions and President Trump rescinded the program in September?
No, I mean, the DACA program and
it was going along.
Where there was nothing wrong with it, but also, you know, I think in my view, this was a political move. And unfortunately, you know, Trump was elected, or Trump basically said, you know, this is what I'm going to do when I get into office. This is the first thing I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't because it was the right thing to do for America. It was because it was the right thing to do for himself,
right,
and for his political, you know.
So the crisis that we're in now in terms of we got to pass a DACA bill, we got to pass a DREAM Act. We didn't have to be here, is what you seem to be saying. This is a created crisis.
That's right. And the issue right now is that, you know, there is a back and forth between Trump, you know, blaming Democrats or, you know, back and forth. But the fact is, we have to name it as it is. Trump ended DACA. Trump and Sessions came out and said the program is over. It's ended in March. You know, it's going to be over. Congress now has to do this. Mm-hmm. They did it. Now, we need to make sure that, you know, Democrats and Republicans who say they support us come together and use this moment to protect Dreamers and to have, you know, permanent protection for all of us, to pass the DREAM Act. And we will have a lot to lose if it doesn't happen. And this is a moment. We can make it happen.
So, Erica, you know, they say that 6,000 Latinos turn 18 every day. It's not just in Arizona and Texas and California and New Mexico. It's in North Carolina, Connecticut, Minnesota, all over the country, really. Mm-hmm. Your generation has been politicized with this DACA fight. What does that mean in terms of civic engagement and leadership? What does it mean for the future?
Mm-hmm. Well, my hope is that we can wake up and see that we have power. And mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. our community has power. And the fact that, you know, we allowed for somebody like our current president to win, you know, I think it should be a wake-up call.
Right.
And that we have to be in the streets right now, and then we have to go into the polls and then go back to the streets again.
Oh, yeah.
And I am hoping that, you know, we can motivate and we can inspire more and more young Latinos and young people of color overall to be civically engaged year round. You know, it's not everybody's as crazy as me going into jail for 6 days. I think you don't have to. You have to, you know, just make sure that you are going into the polls and that you get engaged at the local level to make sure that those people that you elect are also listening to you. And then it comes again, go vote again. And it's just a cycle, but that's how we're going to win. That's the only way we're going to win.
Erica Andiel, everybody.